The wolves had been loosed upon Prospero, and everywhere the planet of the thousand suns burned. In Tisca, planetary capital, the Legion of Rus ran amok, slaughtering all those who stood before them in an orgy of bloodletting unlike anything an imperial loyal population had ever envisaged possible. The assault thus far had utterly demolished the Prosperine Spire Guard, the planet's unaugmented Exertus Imperialis regiments. Strung throughout the city's old quarter, the Spire Guard had hoped that their knowledge of the metropolis, coupled with their better-than-average training and equipment for an auxilia force, would at the very least blunt the invaders' progress. It had done absolutely naught. Transhuman warriors and tribal icons strode through the ambushes the humans of Prospero had placed with impunity, turning ambusher into broken victim in heartbeats, painting the oldest reaches of Tisca with the blood of its soldiery and its civilians alike. What resistance the Spire Guard offered did nothing to stem the tide of ceramite-armored bodies that was pouring from the beachhead drop zone at the shores of the Valparine Sea. As of yet, the Thousand Suns Legion was nowhere to be seen. Know then that this is a further record of the burning of Prospero and the Battle of Tisca. Stretching from the coastal areas where the 6th Legion had made planetfall, all the way to the fringes of the Central District, the Lemsa River was the demarcation line municipally and geographically for the old city of Tisca. It was a perfect defense cordon, both for anyone seeking to halt the advance of an invading army, and for the invading army themselves to resist what they were assured would be an inevitable counterattack. Ironically enough, considering the almost contemptuous ease by which the wolves had thus far dispatched the soldiery of the Spire Guard, the resistance would come from other baseline humans, members of a regiment of Imperial Auxilia known as the Magdan Free Corps. Upon, it was later discovered, orders of agents of the War Master, the Magdan had been rerouted to Prospero for a resupply, and were encamped in the Palatinate Mansions, an ancient relic of a time when Tisca was ruled by hereditary dynasts. The Free Corps hailed from one of the first worlds brought into compliance following the Great Crusade's initial pushes from the Sol system. They were famed for their unimpeachable loyalty to the throne and the Imperium. As with all upon Prospero, the Free Corps were utterly unaware of the unfolding catastrophe and their place within it, but unlike the Spire Guard, they had plenty of combat experience alongside the forces of the Legiones Astartes. Neither did the commanders of the Censor Host know of the presence of the Free Corps, having been uninformed of their quartering upon Prospero by the intelligence provided by, again, the forces of the War Master. Acolytes will perhaps expect another auxilia rout, as baseline human is pitted against the genhanced power of the wolves. On the contrary, the boon of serving alongside the Great Crusade for 2 centuries was that the Free Corps had seen precisely how forces equipped similarly to they themselves fared against Astartes. Instead of attempting to futilely meet them in open combat, human versus transhuman, the Magdan instead sought to leverage what weaponry they had at their disposal that they knew would stand some chance against power armor. As the wolves slaughtered their way through the remaining Spire Guard infantry on the banks of the Lemsa, Magdan Malkador battle tanks took positions in the ornamental gardens of the Palatinate, churning priceless flora under fast-moving treads. A concentrated barrage of high-explosive shells tore into the wolves across the water. The 6th Legion's advance was, here, halted, as the wolves of Rus sought cover from the firepower the Magdan were displaying, having roved far ahead of any of their support armor or heavier weaponry, as they glutted their bloodlust on the fleeing Spire Guard. Elsewhere in the city, however, the 6th were still pressing forward at a terrifying pace. Before the Acropolis Magna, the sagas of Fenris first record Rus as engaging in combat against the masses of terrified civilians and broken auxilia that were attempting to gain access to the relative safety of that old fortress. And so did the King of Wolves come upon the servants of his warp-touched brother, finding them sealed within the iron hearth that served as their lair, where the raven's friends could not reach with their bright sea flames. The ringbreaker of the sixth took hold of the hearth's maw, his mighty thews straining at the effort, and it pried asunder, breaking the jaws apart. Across the smashed gullet of the fortress, the steed of midnight, the sons of Fenris, came howling for the blood of the foe, and within the span of heartbeats, there was left only food for the crows. Looking upon the work of his children, the broken corpses of the foe, the Wolf King judged it well and good. What the poem rather floridly describes is the massacre of the Acropolis Magna. Such was the press of civilians outside that the guns of the fort were unable to be turned by its defenders upon the wolves rampaging through the citizenry of Tizca, and once the Primarch had breached the gates, apparently bodily, this hesitation devolved into panic. The Spire Guard pummeled the crowds with high-velocity rounds in a vain effort to stymie the advance of the Astartes. While some, including the Spire Guard's Seneschal Prime, were successful in leading a group of several thousand civilians out into the White Mountains, the interior of the Acropolis Magna became, in no time at all, an abattoir. The 1st, 2nd, and 12th companies of the Wolves, and Rus himself, made absolutely no distinction between civilian and servicemen, massacring any that were within reach with a lack of remorse that was simply inhuman. Several bitter last stands occurred, where what units of the Spire Guard that had not succumbed to sheer terror sold their lives as best they could against the invaders. The armory vault was barricaded by some 200 soldiers, all of whom managed an impressive 10-minute stand against cataphractii armored terminators of the 1st 6th Legion Company, before detonating the ammunition dump therein in a final act of defiance, when all had become lost. The surprising restraint that the 6th Legion had shown in its capture and interrogation of orbital vessels had been utterly discarded. These were predators loose amongst helpless livestock. Beyond the Magdan Free Corps, they had faced no opposition worth noting, nor had taken any casualties worth mentioning, and yet they were inflicting unto Imperial citizenry, innocent ones to boot, atrocities reserved previously for those who had knowingly defied the Emperor's writ. Death came for all who stood before them, inexorable, violent, and pitiless. The 6th Legion were unopposed in the City of Light. The Air Guard had by now been utterly demolished. No Spire Guard resistance worth noting yet remained. Heavy ordnance, now finally being landed by the Legion's other companies, took up an artillery refrain, shelling sites of cultural importance as they waited, along with now all of their consolidating brethren, for the emergence of their true foes, the Thousand Suns. With the fall of the Acropolis Magna, the 6th Legion now controlled Old Tizca in its entirety. The Spire Guard remained only as pockets of isolated units yet to be overrun by Legion forces, and in the mansion's Palatinate, 6th Legion armor, Predator and Sicaran battle tanks, engaged the Magdan Free Corps in punishment for its earlier resistance, turning the forests and gardens of the mansions into an all-out armored engagement, and depriving the Corps of any ability to link up with the Thousand Suns, if and when they emerged. The Magdan fought where they could, pleading with the Wolves over all Vox channels for a ceasefire and talks, but these were, predictably, completely ignored. Likewise ignored were calls from the remainder of the Censure host still in orbit. Constantin Valdor repeatedly hailed the Wolf King with requests to land the rest of Imperial forces, only to have these rebuffed by the truculent Primarch. The Wolf still yet hunted for any sign of his brother and his legion. Whether or not this was done to satisfy Rus's initial oath, fulfilled now by his being the first boots upon the ground, or be it pride or tactical prudence, all is unclear. Certainly, there is a lot to be said for an invader not showing their full hand, so to speak, but it is also not unheard of for the ego of the Wolf King to dictate how he comported his campaigning. Regardless, what is certain is that the drawing out of the Thousand Sons was clearly Russ's primary objective at this point in the conflict. Scholars have posited that the butchering of the civilian population was simply a part of this, although one considers it gauche not to acknowledge the heinous barbarism inherent in such wanton, feckless brutality. Certainly, the Wolf King did not wish to force entrance into the fortified cult arcologies if he could help it. Much better to draw the 15th out into the open and away from their arcane edifices, for who could say what esoterica lay within, waiting to be unleashed upon a hapless intruder. The wolves, however, had no alternative at this point but to continue their relentless forward advance towards these arcologies, as no enemy was yet presenting itself. What resistance remained was scant in the extreme, taking the form of a family attempting to defend their property with ancient heirloom firearms. None, of course, lived beyond their initial defiance. Any Prosperine who defied the wolves in any capacity was immediately and mercilessly executed. Often, they did not even need to defy. They simply needed to be there. The tempo of the wolves' advance was, however, such that by the time they had reached the foothills of the White Mountains, and their forward units were a mere few kilometers from the Argent Bastion, they were becoming dangerously stretched out. While attempting to run down a retreating Palatine Guard division, a roving pack of Grey Slayers massed for a final charge on their hapless prey. Yet, as the grey-clad Astartes plunged into what they thought was a rout, they were met with a punishing salvo of not las rounds or auto-rifle rounds, but boltra shells. They found their bodies lashed with tendrils of fire that moved as if alive, and their advance blunted by invisible forces they could not understand. Finally, the Thousand Sons had joined in the defense of Tizca. It has been a topic of frequent and oft impassioned debate, at least for those of us parlay to the mysteries of the past, as to the inaction of the Sons of Magnus during the early period of the Battle of Tizca. Some will claim that the losses they were able to inflict upon the invaders at the time of their emergence would not have been possible unless the wolves had been allowed to run rampant and overextend themselves. This, of course, does not account for the sheer devastation the Sixth Legion wrought upon the city and its populace. The Thousand Sons were rarely noted throughout their loyal history as being callous towards civilians. Quite the opposite, in fact. So the idea that they would use the population of their only city on their only homeworld as human shields sits ill. This misdirection theory does also not account for the absence of the 15th's senior staff during the earliest Legion against Legion engagements. What Vox records that remained recoverable in the aftermath of the burning pointed to a council of the Legion's senior-most figures that was convened even as the bombardment started and the wolves' first landers smashed onto Prospero's soil. Only through access to the deepest levels of security in one's archives does the truth emerge. Such a council did in fact take place, convened by Magnus himself, wherein he ordered his legion not to engage the censor host at all. Such reasoning, as with all reasoning displayed by the Cyclops during this entire affair, can only be guessed at. But his council appears to have stayed the wrath of his sons during the period heretofore discussed, although not without fractiousness. The captains of the 15th were sharply divided upon the matter, one made all the more pressing as visions and reports of massive civilian losses reached them within the depths of Magnus's great library. The desire to defend their homeworld warred with their loyalty to their Primarch in a way such bonds had never before been tested, locking the leadership into an intense and emotional debate. Ultimately, a cabal of captains led by First Librarian Azek Ahriman revolted against the Primarch's decree, ordering a full mobilization of the Legion, cults and fellowships both, against the censor host, and abandoning the dissenters within the Great Library to await the coming of the wolves. The scope of the power wielded by the 15th Legion would become immediately and severely apparent. Their emergence was one from all angles, circumventing the lines the wolves had drawn by powers unknown to the sensor host, but of course etheric in nature. Crushing ambushes were now inflicted all across Tizca as the Thousand Suns appeared essentially from thin air to hit the wolves precisely where maximum damage could be inflicted. The invaders, previously almost casualty-less, suffered staggering losses in this initial wave. In the Central Districts, the 3rd Company of the 6th lost some 200 Astartes when the Thousand Suns used telekinetic powers to demolish a building they were clearing of retreating Spire Guard. Assault squads of the 8th Company elsewhere found themselves under constant hit-and-run attacks by red-armored Astartes, who literally vanished the second they were engaged, only to reappear elsewhere seconds later to wreak yet more havoc. Even the fortified circle of the Vilca Fenrica Stormbirds that served as the initial beachhead came under attack by Thousand Suns from the Order of Blindness, inflicting heavy casualties on the command echelon of the wolves before retreating after a counterattack led by Grimnir Blackblood and members of Russ's Huskarls. Elsewhere in the metropolis, the Thousand Suns were striking at will. There was no pattern to their assaults, save for the devastating effectiveness they were having. No heed whatsoever was paid towards the Nikian Edict. The Thousand Suns, as expected, had shucked all pretense of obeying the Emperor's orders in light of the invasion. If, indeed, they had paid any heed. Untrammeled sorcery was at their fingertips, and they clearly saw no reason to hold back. For the most powerful, they became conduits for unimaginably destructive etheric powers, living artillery batteries that hurled fire or lightning or earth or simple kinetic force at the wolves, in furious barrages wrought of purest rage. Others obfuscated their presence, or clouded the minds of the foe, or even turned him against his brother, telepathica, sowing confusion and disorder amongst the wolves and giving their fellow legionaries critical tactical advantages in ambushes. Those less bluntly powerful than their fellows utilized the network of portal gates around Tizca, an ancient network revived and refined by Magnus the Red that allowed a Psyker instantaneous travel between any two points in the metropolis. Many were housed within buildings or underground, and almost all could even accommodate small armored vehicles. All of it granting the Thousand Suns unparalleled mobility to circumvent any lines the wolves were attempting to hold or draw. These lines, of course, were dissolving under the ferocious assault. Everywhere, the 6th Legion was under assault from seemingly all directions at once, with both falling back or advancing, presenting seemingly equal peril. Their vox lines were flooded with electronic and psychic interference, a technology the Thousand Suns did not even need thanks to the expertise of the Athenaeans, the Legion's telepaths, who were now relaying orders in perfect clarity to any and all who needed them. Had the Wolves been a Legion that relied upon a tightly controlled chain of command, this would have likely been an even more disastrous reversal of fortune than it already was. Luckily for the Fenrisborn, however, theirs was a Legion used to autonomy, both at the level of the Great Company and that of the individual squad within it. The Thousand Suns were bleeding them, it was true, but the disruption to communications and coordination would not alone be enough to defeat the 6th. Russ certainly ordered no retreat. Quite the opposite. He reaffirmed with what commanders he could raise on Vox networks that their positions must hold and that the momentum of the invasion could not falter or be handed to the Thousand Suns. What could at least be established was that the Wolf King had succeeded in one of his primary objectives. He had, in fact, drawn out the 15th Legion, and despite the continued absence of their Primarch, this was, in its own way, progress, despite the toll it was taking on his wolves. His front line was, however, in imminent danger of collapse. The reserves, or what had passed for them in a Legion as aggressive as the 6th, were summoned for a push by Russ himself that would lead towards the central districts of the city, targeting the temple arcologies of the Pyrae and Corvidae cults. If these could be captured, it would allow the Wolves to claim a perfect forward operating base for an assault on the Great Pyramid of Fotep in Oculum Square, within which Russ was convinced his brother yet dwelled. The arcologies, however, would be no mean feat. 9 in total, 5 of which housed the cults themselves, they were in effect proto-hives, mountainous city structures that were, for the Thousand Sons, barracks, librariums, archives, training facilities, armories, and defensive fortifications, all in one. The majority of the city's population was housed within 8 of them, and, should an emergency strike, their cavernous lower levels could shelter many, many more. While the Corvidae were amongst the less martial of the fivefold cults, the Pyrae were another matter entirely, consisting of the most bellicose of the Legion Psykers, and a great many of those that were inducted into the Order of Ruin. The hammer that fell on Central Tiska was led by Russ's Varagir Terminator elite from the 6th First Great Company, supported by the Pale Hunter bands and armored columns of the 2nd and 3rd Great Companies. Reports of the Thousand Sons engaging the wolves elsewhere in the city, and forward scouts reporting minimal to no ground presence of the Legion in the path of this offensive, gave Russ some confidence that resistance may be minimal. He was mistaken. The opposition was dug in, prepared, and furious. Elite divisions of the Proserpine Spire Guard, fresh from defensive positions within the Temple Arcologies, had fortified all approaches, learning from the blood spilled in the Old Quarter to throw only their heaviest weaponry at the attacking Astartes from the safest and most defensible positions available. The real game-changer for the Auxilia were, of course, the presence of the Thousand Sons. Many of the units encountered by the wolves bore the same markings as those the scattered Voxlogs had placed in other, further reaches of the city, causing confusion and angst amongst the wolves as to how such a thing was even possible, the 6th being utterly unaware of the nature of how the 15th Legion was traversing their home turf. The Thousand Sons were supported in their efforts by the battle automata yet unencountered by the invaders, bespoke Castellex Achaea marks constructed for the Legion by the Mechanicum of Shao Arcad. Augmented by psychically sensitive crystalline cortex matrices, these Castellex were controllable by almost any Psyker within range, and possessed a certain amount of free will themselves, becoming in effect far more responsive and lethal than the cruder marks employed by those bound by strict Martian dogma. This would no doubt have raised rancor amongst Imperial elements if such a thing was not eclipsed by the far greater crimes of psychic utilization the Thousand Sons were already wantonly displaying. But regardless, the automata were reaping a fearsome tally of kills amongst the attackers with their molar bolt cannons. This new front was now seeing the most vicious fighting of the battle emerge yet. Massive concentrations of Legionnaires Astartes and their supporting elements were clashing across a huge theater. Such a conflict between Astartes had never before been recorded in Imperial history. Even the ferocity that the wolves have evinced during the redacted confrontation between them and the 12th Legion World Eaters was a skirmish compared to the destruction that both legions were unleashing upon each other. Russ committed over 20,000 of his Astartes to the push, and the Thousand Sons more than met him in numbers, even before the force-multiplying effects of their Psyker talents were accounted for. Tiska was being torn asunder as erstwhile brother met erstwhile brother, and both sides tore into each other with all the hatred and pain of transhumans betrayed. The intent of the wolves since planetfall had been to tear down the great works of Magnus, to burn his libraries, demolish his theaters, crush the culture of his world under ceramite boots. And now the sons of the Crimson King turned what had been spared from the fury of the wolves into shot and fire-blasted ruins in their desire for revenge. In the northern reaches, the wolves of the 8th and 12th Great Companies came under renewed assault by the Order of Blindness, freed now from their abortive assault on the 6th Legion's beachhead. A bloody gambit of ambush and counter-ambush emerged, all of it in the favor of the psychic infiltrators of the Thousand Sons. Using perceptual psychana to mask their movements and misdirect the invaders, the several hundred Thousand Sons tied down almost 10,000 wolves from linking up with their comrades, bleeding the great companies in every engagement and taking next to no casualties in return. The battle for the manors yet continued too, with the Magdan Free Corps continuing to resist the invaders through the now devastated ornamental gardens. Their proverbial backs against the wall, all restraint that may once have been the pride of the Thousand Sons, was completely discarded. Knowing redemption was forever beyond their grasp, Sykhana, unlike anything the Imperium had ever seen, was now being released across Tizca to brutal effect. Lightning, the color of pain itself, speared from the now churning sky. The earth erupted in deluges of rock and metal. Iridescent flames wormed through Tizcan streets, hunting wolves like a predator. Attackers meeting defenders found themselves pummeled by invisible force, or saw their brothers sliced by invisible blades, unseen forces shearing through power armor as if it was paper. The bodies of the wolves rebelled against them, locking bone and sinew in place, or causing their flesh to run like wax and their organs to boil inside their chest cavities. The deluge of psychic energy, now coalescing around the city, was forming a vortex, and the veil between Prospero and the Immaterium was wearing thin. This was not immediately apparent, but as the battle progressed, the sky only darkened further, and the ground began to quake, seemingly of its own volition. Cracks rent buildings, and a dread unlike anything the Astartes fighting had ever experienced fell upon them. Unmistakable, unignorable, eating away at their humors and driving their fury and hatred to new heights. The battle did not abate. If anything, it just built, the intensity climbing. The Thousand Sons deployed more and more units through their portal network, now seeking to press the flanks of the wolves' offensive and cut the first company off from its beachhead, and what little reserves the wolves still possessed. This course of action was broad, and as such could not go unnoticed by any who were watching. In orbit, eyes were scrying the unfolding situation, as aboard the flagship of the Legio Custodes, the mighty auric Oriflame. Constantin Valdor was demanding updated reports from whatever sensorium suites were still functioning. The etheric squall building over Tizca was rendering intelligence less verifiable by the minute. Russ was completely uncontactable, both due to the interference on the comms and his preoccupation essentially fighting for his life. Neither, too, was the Legio Mortis raisable, the demi-maniple of Titans sent to attack the Mechanicum Forge Fane on the city's outskirts, having disappeared entirely from sensor screens. It was clear that should the Legio Custodes and the Sisters of Silence delay intervention further, the wolves would suffer, and the invasion would be put at dire risk. Yet doing so would of course countermand a direct order to remain in orbit from the sensor host's supreme commander. Judging discretion to be the better part of valor, the Captain General ordered a drop in force. Not to reinforce the wolves on any particular front, but to open up another, directing the Legio Custodes and Silent Sisterhood to open combat operations at Tizca's orbital transfer docklands. This would, Valdor coolly reasoned, spare the Wolf King any wounded pride, and spare the Captain General any wasted time for having to placate the Primarch's ego, neither of which the sensor host could afford at this critical moment. 36 sodalities were deployed, alongside the 9th Solar Auxilia Regiments and an unnumbered series of Silent Sisterhood Hunter Cadres, all dropping from orbit conventionally, as fears of the city's Kinney Shield interfering with teleportation were well-reasoned. The drop was not uncontested. The remaining Thousand Suns air defense units, now primarily made up of lightning interceptors, attempted runs on the sleek Custodes gunships and ponderous auxilia landers, claiming several of each before Equinox fighters disintegrated them in return. Over 1,000 solar auxilia and several custodians perished in the planetfall, but those that survived moved swiftly to consolidate their gains. Reports before communications had collapsed spoke of the speed of Thousand Suns redeployment, and the Custodes sodalities were fully aware that a new front opening up on their flanks would elicit a rapid response. Assignments for the capture of the starport were direct. The sodalities of the Emperor's own life wards made a direct line for the control tower in Coronus transports, supported by Palace grav tanks that tore into Spire Guard armored squadrons with utter impunity. The Solar cohorts, meanwhile, focused on seizing the starport's defensive fortifications, void hoplitev sections clearing interiors that their rapier laser track batteries had broken open. The professionalism displayed by the Saturnine Auxilia was impressive, but it stood as nothing compared to that of the Custodes when they reached their target. The command tower fell in minutes. Other military bodies trained squads for coherent, supportive work. The Custodes simply do not need to. Each warrior, an artifice of the Emperor himself, is an army unto his own. They move and fight as individuals, trusting training and Genhan's senses to respond to the needs of their comrades, should they arise. Where the Spire Guard had engaged the wolves, the result was butchery. Where they met the Emperor's Auric warriors, it was a similar rout, but one conducted with a clean, detached professionalism that was monstrous in a completely different fashion. The Custodes were simply unstoppable. Not a single warrior fell in the capture of the Space Force. Until, that is, they faced Astartes defenders. At the spire of the command tower, the Sodalities under Valdor encountered the warriors of the Sekhmet. These cataphracti-armored warriors were the Terminator elite of the Thousand Suns, the warders of Magnus the Red, and formidable psykers all, forming an almost gestalt consciousness when deployed together. The clash was on a scale only possible through the transhumanity of all involved. The first custodians to fall upon Prospero did so here, in the bloody confine, and the man in question took three of the Sekhmet to bring him down. This pattern was repeated as the combat intensified. For all the elite experience and psychic craft of the Thousand Suns Terminators, those they faced were elevated above them even higher on the artificial human evolutionary path envisaged and wrought by the Emperor. Each golden warrior that fell exacted four times that number in Sekhmet casualties. Their psyker talents were a potent force to reckon with, yet as the battle for the tower reached its pinnacle, the Terminators suddenly found themselves robbed of it. Summoned by the Custodes, the Null Maidens of the Silent Sisterhood, pariah blanks that stole the power of the warp from all around them, had arrived. And with this arrival, the fate of the Sekhmet was sealed. The remaining Terminators were overwhelmed by the Custodes, suffering a defeat like nothing the formation had ever endured, and at the hands of a foe that would not even note such a victory as worthy of comment. Merely a dispassionate acknowledgement that an objective had been secured. With the docks in censor host hands, Valdor delayed the orbital reserves not a moment longer. The remainder of the host's soldiery was ordered to land immediately and at full combat readiness, be they Silent Sisters, Legio Custodes, Imperial Auxilia, or Mechanicum. The Astartes elements, however, largely elected to remain for the Wolfking summons. This extended to not only the majority of the wolves still in Prosperine skies, but the contingent of Sons of Horus Astartes that had joined the host at Beta Garmin. That being said, the 13th Great Company, bloodthirsty for the enemy, and the 11th, those of the so-called Black Cull that had fallen to psychotic battle hunger, elected to join the Captain General on this new front, leaving the 4th, 5th, 7th, and 9th Companies in reserve, alongside the Sons of Horus, and the ebony Titan barks of the Ordo Sinister. Valdor highlighted what he deemed to be the most important of immediate concerns. Two objectives. The first, a push northward through the Palatinate Mansions, destroying the remainder of the Magdan Free Corps in the process, and linking up with the embattled Leman Russ and his first wave. The second objective was an advance eastwards, to seize the great Sesostrian Canal. This latter move would allow forward passage onto the pyramids of the Domus Tenebrae, and the Praefarium Aeternus at the city's center. What resistance barred this path as it currently stood was scattered and half-mad with losses sustained. The Spire Guard had ceased to function in any coherent capacity, but had, thanks to their mauling at the hands of the wolves, begun to refuse any Imperial demands of surrender, knowing that to do so was death anyway. Pickets of Tizcan units were thus strung out along the path Valdor was electing to take, but none would bar the path of the rapidly deploying censor host, be they Solar Auxilia or Legio Custodes. Valdor knew that the Thousand Suns would intervene, that as their Psychana gave them unparalleled mobility, Their actions could not be planned for beyond reactionary retaliations if and when they emerged. Regardless, Captain General had laid out a course that would see another Imperial offensive drive straight into the city's heart, and it was his hope that this would bring about a swift and decisive end to the Battle of Prospero. Of course, would that it were so simple. Until the next entry in this chronicle. Ave Imperator, Gloria in Excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @OculusImperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.